Thank you, Dr. Fowler, for that wonderful word of introduction. Debbie, I've been telling you that all of those things were true, and I'm glad you heard them from someone else. Dr. Dockery, thank you for the wonderful opportunity to be here among this group. I do count it a great privilege. I count it a great responsibility. Although you will find that I really have nothing of great note or worth to say that you haven't thought about or been wrestling with previously. Nonetheless, I feel like the subject is important. We've heard a great sermon, if you will, this afternoon on the need to cooperate and the need for the cooperative program. We've heard an inspiring word tonight about the need to humbly submit ourselves to God so that we might be humble evangelists. And now we move to state conventions and associations. I'm not sure there will be much inspiration here, but perhaps there will be some perspiration and some hard work as a result. I need perhaps to settle a thing or two before I begin, a disclaimer or two, if you don't mind. Number one, I am a traditional Southern Baptist. In the words of David Ring, I was Southern Baptist 9 months before I was born. I was cradle rolled, I was beginnered, I was juniored, I was intermediated. I was everything you could be in a Southern Baptist church. I was an RA. Had it been allowed, I would have been a GA. If you wanted to play Name That Tune tonight with the 1956 Baptist hymnal, we could play. You call a number, I'll sing the songs by memory. 93, The Old Rugged Cross. Number one, Holy, Holy, Holy. Do you know that in the 1975 and the 1992 hymnal, they had the audacity to make Holy, Holy, Holy number two? That's wrong. It's just wrong. Call a number, I'll sing the song. Well, at least the first, second, and fourth stanzas of the song. Because that's the way we do it in the traditional Southern Baptist church. I'm a traditional Southern Baptist coming to you out of those kind of roots to talk about associations and state conventions. I must also confess to you that I am not the scholar or the son of a scholar. I am an observer of Southern Baptist life, if you will. An observer from the time I graduated the first time at Southern Seminary in 1979, that was a good year. And I graduated again from Southern Seminary in 1996 and didn't recognize the place when I went to the graduation ceremony. Things had changed. I'm an observer of the things that have changed in Southern Baptist life. And one further confession, I would have to confess to you that my seat of observation has largely been from a denominational position. I served for 12 years with the former Brotherhood Commission. I served for 9 years with the North American Mission Board, and now for almost the last 2 years as a director of missions. So there may indeed be some bias that you recognize and do or do not appreciate when I began to share with you about state conventions and associations. With those disclaimers aside, let's begin. On Monday of this week, I received a packet from the North American Mission Board containing promotional materials for the annually calendared Associational Emphasis Week. The theme for this year, which celebrates the birth of the first association almost 300 years ago, is the Baptist Association Then and Now. My administrative assistant received the information knowing the state of my preparedness for this particular conference at that particular time, made a slight adjustment on the headline that jumped from the page, tossed it to me, and I read, "The Baptist Association, Then and Now, and Just in Time." I could not help but remember at that moment that while serving at the North American Mission Board, I had led an unsuccessful campaign to kill the publication of annual associational emphasis material. because it was very expensive to produce, it was very expensive to distribute, and it produced very little result. On Monday, however, I gave thanks that the campaign had been unsuccessful. Context is amazingly important, isn't it? Context is amazingly important. And as we begin this discussion of associations and state conventions, it's important to set the context. So I want to spend just a few of our minutes looking at the pathway from the past. In terms of associations and state conventions, where did we come from? How did we get to where we are today? The starting line for the pathway from the past is a period that we will just simply call the beginning days. It started in 1707. It ended in 1814. It's marked by the establishment of 125 local Baptist associations in the colonies. The first of those was the Philadelphia Baptist Association, established in 1707. This particular association captured the essence of associationalism and set the model for associationalism as we would know it for many years to come. They simply stated their desire to select the most capable in every congregation and to meet yearly to consult about such things as were wanting in the churches and to set those things in order. Very simply stated, the Philadelphia Baptist Association set the course for what the association of the future should be. It should be church-centered, it should be advisory in nature, and it should be cooperative in its nature. The first association also nailed down some important concepts in terms of how associations and churches relate to one another. In 1749, they asked Benjamin Griffith to write an article on the power and the authority of associations. He affirmed three things that we hold dear today in associationalism. First, he affirmed that the association is not superior or a superior judicatory having power over the churches. He affirmed, as a matter of fact, that it has no superintendency over the churches, but was subservient to the churches. Again, that affirmation of the role. He affirmed also that the association was autonomous, just as the local congregation was autonomous. And thirdly, he asserted that the association could advise the churches on proper procedures and proper beliefs, but the churches were under no obligation to receive that guidance. Those three tenets form some of the basic principles of associations today. And with those statements, the foundations of associationalism and mutual cooperation as we know it in our country were established. Bill Agee of the North American Mission Board says that for the first 100 years, associations were very effective. Quote, they fostered fellowship, maintained uniformity in faith and practice among the churches, gave support and counsel, and provided a vehicle for churches to cooperate. That is the first period, if you will, in associational life. Let's move to the second major milepost along the journey from the past. Let's call it the transitional years. It spans from 1814 to 1920. It's marked by the development of additional local associations, missionary societies, state conventions, and even the Southern Baptist Convention. Associations did not seem to be threatened by the development of these particular entities at this time. As a matter of fact, they participated freely in the establishment of those entities. But you will not be surprised that the establishment of state conventions and national bodies created an identity crisis for the association. One observer said, the district association has been diverted from its original purpose and has become a mere reproduction on a small scale of state conventions. The truth is that the role of the association did change during this particular period. It changed from being the kind of association that the Philadelphia Baptist Association had been to being, as Glenn Ford states, the changes involve shifting from a doctrinally based fellowship of churches to an implementing agency of the denomination. shifting from a guardian of the fellowship to a denominational promoter, and shifting the initiative for mission from the churches to the state convention and national convention. A very important development when the state conventions and the national conventions were seen as taking the initiative for mission as opposed to the church taking initiative. Let's call the third major mile marker the modern era and date it from 1920 to 1978. Though there were significant challenges during this period in defining the denomination and its components, this was boom time for Baptists. The end of World War I brought a level of optimism that had not been seen in some time. It also brought with it a spirit of cooperation. As a matter of fact, during this particular period, cooperation became a watchword for Southern Baptists. The 75 million campaign from 1919 to 1924 did produce more pledges than it produced profit, but it did set the stage for the development of the cooperative program in 1925. In the same year, 1925, Southern Baptists adopted their first Baptist faith and message, which included an article of confession regarding cooperation. In this particular period, which we know as the modern era, we saw the beginning of confessed cooperation and intentional cooperation among the churches. It will never be a bad thing for Southern Baptists to determine that we will cooperate. It will never be a bad thing for Southern Baptists to determine how we will cooperate. But it should be noted that the cooperative foundations poured in this particular period posed an interesting dynamic for state conventions and local associations. First, in 1928, the SBC established a definitive role for state conventions as related to the association. The 1928 annual reads, "The cooperative relations between this convention and state bodies as now established are limited to the one matter of collecting funds for Southwide and state objects in conjunction with a unified appeal for those objects." In short, the state convention became the receivers and distributors of cooperative program funds. The Southern Baptist Convention was quick to point out, and I quote, "This arrangement, however, is not an essential in Baptist organization, but is made simply as a matter of convenience and may be changed at any time." Though the convention action of 1928 seemed to prop open a door for a possible change in regard to the receipt and distribution of cooperative program monies, it should be noted that to this day, that arrangement has not changed. And to this day, the states are still the receivers and distributors of those cooperative monies, or at least those monies that are officially known as cooperative program monies. On the other hand, the inception of the cooperative program created a different dynamic for associations. Paul Stripling notes that following the creation of the cooperative program, actual debate arose as to whether the local association had any legitimate place in Baptist life. But much to the edification of the self-image of associations, it was concluded in the 1933 edition of the Baptist Handbook, "The one way of enlisting our great missions causes and bringing them back to the day of power and triumph is to carry the battle for these great causes to the association." So this era of that we know as the modern era is an era in which clear assignment was given to state conventions toward the collection of cooperative program funds, and which the association began to struggle with the fact that it had no clear assignment in regard to the collection of such funds. Final section, very quickly, the fourth mile marker, the finish line of this particular journey from the past, let's just call the reformation. The reformation, the final signpost, begins in 1978, brings us to 2007. It's the period that began with the conservative resurgence, been marked by massive restructuring of the SBC, major leadership changes within SBC entities, major cultural and theological changes to which the SBC is pressed to respond, and even the issuance of a revised Baptist faith and message. I believe history will view this period in Southern Baptist life as rough, necessary, fruitful, and dramatically defining. I, for one, am pleased that God allowed me to experience and participate in Southern Baptist life during this period. That doesn't mean that it was a period free of frustrations, particularly for state conventions and associations. In response to dramatic change during this period of reformation, both associations and state conventions have experienced pain. Both have dealt with financial issues ensuing from those who choose non-traditional methods of support for the work of the convention. Both have wrangled with the theological stress that has accompanied reformation. Both are wrestling with the dilemma of maintaining or creating a denominational brand in a post-denominational age. Both are struggling with how to relate and, with a little luck, even be relevant to emerging churches, missional churches, purpose-driven churches, and young leaders. And this is a period in which we have been dramatically reformed and are reluctantly reforming. It's an important period in the life of Southern Baptist. It's an important period in the life of association. Let me attempt to summarize all of that in just a few simple statements. This brief review makes it evident that associations and subsequently Baptist state conventions were, number one, birthed by biblical Baptists. They were birthed by Baptists who embraced the biblical concepts of cooperation. Number two, they were nurtured by believing Baptists who believed that the mission of God in the world was too large for a single body and demanded cooperation. Number three, they were shaped by bureaucratic Baptists. I trust that doesn't offend you. I trust it doesn't offend anyone in the room. Some will certainly agree with it. Some would say, how dare you call us bureaucrats? But with the exception of the fact that we have no articulated hierarchy, we as the Southern Baptist Convention are a bureaucracy. We are a very large, very bulky administrative body that takes a lot of time and a lot of effort to manage. Shaped by bureaucratic Baptists, defined by battling Baptists, who have fought most often for the right thing, sometimes for the wrong thing, but in every case to the benefit of the convention and its bodies, because it has been a refining or redefining experience. Defined by battling Baptist, and I'd say finally questioned by befuddled Baptist. Let's face it, a lot of what we do within our Southern Baptist systems is confusing, particularly to the local church. Frank Page said this afternoon, there's a lot of what we've been practicing for a long time that needs to be questioned, perhaps even changed. I agree. The questions are coming from a variety of places. I most often notice them in the blogosphere. I don't know what that is, but I sure enjoyed saying the word. Some of us who are traditional Southern Baptists who have been about this business for a long time have determined that the word blog, B-L-O-G, means big load of gossip. And so we ignore it. I would suggest to us that we might ought to come to the point where we consider the word blog, B-L-O-G, to mean better listen to the Outpost guys, because they're raising the questions that we need to be answering, particularly if we are going to define a period when state associations our local associations and state conventions are viable to the church. That's the pathway from the past. The questions that have surfaced force us to think about the predicaments of the present. Denominationally and as state conventions and as associations, we have worked ourselves into some corners. We have walked ourselves out to the edges of some cliffs. We have backed ourselves into some precarious spots. And we have posed ourselves with various predicaments. We have created some predicaments that we must decide that we're going to manage in order to get to the future. And I'll mention just a few of those in very short order. How about the number one, the duplicated effort syndrome? We do good things in Southern Baptist life at a lot of different levels. Truth is, we do the same things in Southern Baptist life at a lot of different levels. In our association today, you can seek someone who will assess you as a church planter, who will process you as a church planter, who will train you as a church planter, and who will deploy you as a church planter. That service is available through the Mid-South Baptist Association. That service is also available through the Tennessee Baptist Convention, the exact service. That service is also available from the North American Mission Board, the same service. The only difficulty is that three different staffs in three different places are providing the exact same service. Duplicated effort syndrome. Our bigness, our largeness, our success, if you will, has created this duplication of efforts. Folks see the duplicated effort and the multiple dollars that it takes to duplicate those efforts, and they simply wonder why, and they lose faith in associations, state conventions, institutions, and the denomination. And second, how about this one? How about the institution first syndrome? Since the booming years of the modern era, we have had institutions to care for, particularly at the state convention level, colleges, academies, seminaries, children's homes, hospitals, camps, student centers, ministry centers, assemblies, all of those things have made their way into Southern Baptist life. These are not bad things, but these are expensive things. We did not intend to be overwhelmed and consumed by these things, but our need to provide and our need to educate and our need to edify pushed us into the institutional business. In these days, most state conventions are working as hard as they can to get out of the institutional business. When were you last at a state convention or association meeting where the institutions attached to that state or association were not the hottest topic? They rule the day because they rule the roost. It is a matter of feeding the beast, if you will. I honestly believe that state conventions and Southern Baptist Convention did not intend for that to happen. The prevalence of institutions was brought about by perceived needs and the need to meet those needs. But it's a reality, it's a predicament that we must deal with today if we're going to move effectively toward the future. How about the third one? I hope it'll make more sense to you than it made to me when I first stumbled on it. How about the autonomous hierarchy syndrome? Autonomous hierarchy. You say there could not be such a thing, but there is. In Southern Baptist life, every entity, the church, the association, the state convention, the SBC, will proclaim autonomy as sacred and necessary. Yet we behave sometimes as if we require the approval of others. Or we behave as if we think we have the right to approve. We're autonomous, but we're also hierarchical. It's an implied hierarchy for sure. We won't ever claim that it really exists. The problem with this hierarchy is just one real problem that I see, because I think a lot of it goes with the kinds of organizations we're trying to be. The real problem is that the church winds up at the bottom of the pile. And in Scripture, it is the church that is at the top of the pile, well ahead of any denominational entity of any shape or any form. Autonomous hierarchy. Well, if that's not good for you, how about codified cooperation syndrome? I really like the ring of that. We have undertaken at several junctures in Southern Baptist life the task of defining what cooperation is. We've undertaken the task of defining how we cooperate and who we will cooperate with. The Baptist Faith and Message contains a very clear and adequately open statement of how we as Southern Baptists cooperate. The Baptist Faith and Message itself issues to us a strong set of parameters for all faith and practice. It is good enough. Yet, it seems that almost daily we attempt through our institutions, our entities, our state conventions, and our associations to further define what it means to cooperate as a Southern Baptist. I really didn't expect that kind of comment, so I'm a bit disarmed. We have to decide what is enough. We fought long and hard to say that the conservative resurgence and the Baptist Faith and Message were enough. And yet, having those matters settled, we tend to want to move forward even more and draw the lines even tighter. I don't know if that's right or wrong, good or bad, but I know it's a dilemma. It's a predicament. It's one that must be managed going forward. Well, number five, the thinly spread mission dollar syndrome. Well, could that be true? Could our mission dollars really be decreasing? Could they be so thinly spread? 10 out of the last 11 years, the cooperative program receipts exceeded the prior year. That doesn't look like things are thinning out unless you really dig down into the numbers. And you look at a five-year period in the mid-1980s when CP receipts equaled 10.5% of the total undesignated receipts of the churches. And then you look at 2002 and you see that CP receipts equals 7.39% of the total undesignated gifts received by the churches. The mission dollar is thinning out. Given our size, our scope of ministries, we have to share fewer dollars with more ministries. How do we manage that? Well, currently, states will decide that they're going to retain more of the cooperative program dollars, or churches may decide that they're going to retain more for their local ministries. And local associations are bound to beg for more to support their ministries. That's not the way we're going to find a successful resolution of that particular issue. The dollar is thinning out for missions. Number six, not on the overhead, the lost influence syndrome. And we've heard already tonight from Dr. Rayner the affirmation that SBC baptisms are at their lowest level in 12 years, that the SBC church planting rate is basically stagnant, that 73% of SBC churches are plateaued or declining. We have lost our influence as denominational entities in resourcing the church to do their job. Consequently, the church has lost its influence, or much of its influence, in the world. I'm not tossing these things out in an attempt to be controversial or an attempt to be a prophet. I think that the realistic Southern Baptist of this day can look realistically at his association or his state convention and see that each of these six predicaments exist at some level. We have a good past. We have a strong past. We have a present full of predicaments that we must manage. So we know from our pathway where we've been. And we have a sense of where we've landed and what predicaments we must manage. How do we do that? How do you manage those particular items? Well, some have suggested you just start a new kind of association. Just leave all of that behind and start an affinity-based association. Or start an association that is functionally based and deals with church planting only or evangelism only. There are all types of new associations springing up in Baptist life and outside of Baptist life. So one solution is to start a new association. Some have followed that and started new state conventions that are more in keeping with their particular theology or their particular direction. I would ask, is that the way we want to resolve the predicaments that we face? Morris Chapman, speaking at this particular conference 2 years ago, said, and I quote, "The Southern Baptist Convention needs fine-tuning. In fact, the convention may require an overhaul, not in its polity, but in its programming and processes by which it functions daily. A major overhaul by the National Convention and the state conventions appears to be an absolute necessity, letting the facts speak for themselves, lest the conventions discover too late they were blind and deaf to a delivery system that better serves the churches." Profound. Inclusive of state conventions and the national convention, but I would quickly add that local associations are in need of the same kind of fine-tuning, the same kind of overhaul. But then I'm prone to ask, is an overhaul enough? Permit this simple illustration. My dad was a shade tree mechanic. He didn't make his living as a mechanic, but he could fix anything on any car in existence. I watched him overhaul two engines in my lifetime. The engine of a 1962 Rambler sedan and a 1969 Carmengia Volkswagen. And he followed the same process in what he called his overhaul of both engines. He took them out of the car. He took them apart piece by piece. He examined each part. He kept the parts that were good, discarded the parts that were bad, planed down the parts that were not smooth, but then he reassembled it all in the same way he had taken it apart. And the result was the same engine that we had all ways had. Just a few things had been changed. It ran like it always ran, and it ran better for a little while, but then it began to bog down again. So the question would be, I know that illustration is just too deep for most of you to follow, but the question would be, is an overhaul enough? Is there a need for a new car? I don't have an answer, but I do think we see on the horizon a new paradigm. There is a new paradigm arising, emerging for Southern Baptist associations and state conventions. It is not a fully developed paradigm. It is probably at the stage that most paradigms go through, in that it is embraced by a few, touted by a few, and discussed and dismissed by the many. But it is a paradigm that's emerging in our denomination. It's a paradigm that you will see in part in the Tulsa Baptist Association. It's a paradigm that you will see in part in the Mid-South Baptist Association. It's a paradigm that you will see in part in the St. Louis Baptist Association and many other associations that are trying their hardest to face the predicaments of this particular generation. Let me quickly just give you a few of the elements of that paradigm. Number one, it is church-driven. It starts with the church as the legitimate expression of God's mission in the world. It affirms that the Great Commission was given to the church and not to denominations or denominational entities. It affirms that Acts 1:8 was spoken to the church. You, the church, will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you, the church, and you, the church, will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and unto the uttermost parts of the earth. It begins with the church just as God began with the church. It is a church-driven vehicle. The second characteristic of this paradigm is that it's priority-based. As a church-driven association, this body is focused upon the priorities of the church. Now, what are the priorities of the church? Well, if the church is the body of Christ, then the priority of the body of Christ is to behave like Jesus. What did Jesus do when he was here? Jesus established the church. He started the church. He developed leaders, his disciples. He preached the gospel, and he sent the church into the world to preach the gospel. This priority-driven association is going fine as its points of focus, church planting and revitalization, church leadership development, and the mobilization of the church to preach the gospel. Those three simple priorities will form the basis for many churches that will emerge from this paradigm. It is priority-based. The third thing, it appears to be resource-focused. This kind of association exists to provide the resources that assist the church in accomplishment of their mission. This is the kind of association that I want to be involved in, because this association has no programs to maintain. It has no ministries to develop of its own, but it uses its collective resources to assist the churches in fulfilling the commission that God has given to them. Now, some of you are wondering what I've been eating, what I've been smoking. Where in the world could I be thinking? Don't I know that the Southern Baptist Convention has said for years that we are focused upon the needs of the church? Am I not aware that in our massive restructuring in 1995, the Covenant for the New Century, we even changed our program statements to indicate that every entity in the Southern Baptist Convention exists to assist the church. Assist the church. And my question is, has the church gotten that message? Does the church realize that that's what we're about? I would say, based on the predicaments that we find ourselves in, the church has somehow not heard that message, or we have not communicated it clearly. The fourth thing about this new kind of association is that it's institution-free. This is the kind of association that will work hard to avoid owning anything. It may have to own a building, but it may decide that it doesn't have to own a camp. It doesn't have to own ministry centers. It doesn't have to own schools. This doesn't mean that this kind of association or state convention would not support those institutions. It simply means that they would not saddle themselves with ownership of those institutions. They would free themselves to minister to and support the needs of the churches. And so it's sort of a no-brainer. It works like this. Do you want to have campus ministry in your association? Indeed, you have two options. Start a campus ministry that is run by the association, or find five or six churches that have a heart for campus ministry, provide them with some resource, and turn them loose to perform that ministry. It's institution free, but it does support institutions. The fifth thing, this association will be strategically managed. Now, what I mean by that is that the director of missions, the associational missionary, whatever he is called, and the staff that is assembled there, if there is indeed any staff, will model a catalytic, facilitative missionary role. They will be there to facilitate the work of the church. They will provide demographics for those churches who want to plant churches. They will provide help for those churches who need to call staff. They will be there in a catalytic role, not in a director's role. Strategically managed. Sixth thing, this new association will be regionally located, but not geographically bound. Regionally located, but not geographically bound. We are in an age when it's no longer necessary or perhaps even productive for us to affiliate within county lines or state lines. Through a device that most of you are wearing on your hip tonight or carrying in your purse, you have access to the entire Baptist world. You have access to the entire pagan world through devices that you're carrying with you tonight. In that kind of environment, why would we compel ourselves to operate within outdated boundaries? We need to consider an association of churches working together, regionally located, but not geographically bound. I don't know exactly how that gets configured. Perhaps it gets configured around the 100 largest cities in North America. Perhaps it gets configured around the 50 largest cities in North America. I'm not exactly sure how it will be configured, but I believe the solution, the answer to that question, is coming. Number seven, this new association will be denominationally connected, but not in the traditional ways. It will not necessarily rely on a state convention to be its primary source of training, input, and perhaps even income. As a matter of fact, this new association, will be a combined entity. If it reaches its fullest point, if this paradigm plays itself out to the fullest, then the association as we know it today and the state convention as we know it today will likely no longer exist. They will morph into this regional kind of association of churches. Well, that settles it. He's talking off the top of his head. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Where has he been? He said he'd been observing Southern Baptist life. I have, and those are my conclusions. They're not scholarly. They're not prophetic, particularly. It is what it is. It is where we are, and it is what we're dealing with. And I'm grateful to be in a convention of talented, talented spiritual people who have first given their heart to Christ and now have given their lives to His church, and in behalf of His church are looking for ways to enable that church to be on mission in the world. I was going to deal with pressure points. You know what those are. You know what pressure points are. Biologically, there's a negative and a positive connotation to pressure points. If I were to cut my finger while I'm standing on this platform tonight, someone who knew the body could come and find the pressure point at which they could apply pressure and stop the bleeding. But if I got too out of hand and someone wanted to do me harm out of a martial arts perspective, they would just find the right pressure point and do me in. So pressure points can have both a negative and a positive connotation. It's time for us to apply the pressure and stop the bleeding in the Southern Baptist Convention. It is also time for us to apply the appropriate pressure, lose the things that are not contributing to the kingdom, and accentuate the things that will bring glory to God. I thank you for your patient listening to my rantings. I pray that God will bless us, for only God can create the paradigm through which this great Southern Baptist Convention can be all that He intended it to be. God bless you.